Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible live from Gainesville, Florida and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, man. Good to holler at you today. We're going to talk a little text, try to get ready for preaching. We are going where two Bubbas have never boldly gone before as we discuss these texts for the seventh Sunday after the Epiphany. The text for February the 24th, 2019. We say we have never boldly gone. We have not rolled around with a seventh Sunday after the Epiphany since we've been doing this broadcast or started the Lectionary Lab some time ago. And I'm not sure exactly why that is other than, well, that's just the way the calendar has worked out with our lunar system here.
Easter is as late as it can be.
Yeah.
And it seldom gets that far. So that's the bottom line. That's why Epiphany had to stretch out.
Yeah.
And
just for our listening audience, just going to say, if y'all are like us going, I don't remember doing these texts before. it's been a while. We don't do this Sunday very often.
Well, this is one of those kind of, I shouldn't tell you this, but cheat a little bit and get into your Throckmorton gospel parallels and find the Matthew Sermon on the Mount and something relatively similar to what Luke said, although there's some differences. And then look, if you're digging for sermon file, you'll find if you got a good file, you have preached on Matthew's version of this before.
True.
And if you want to homogenize,
you may find
some things in there that'll be helpful. How's that?
You're advocating the opposite of what we normally say. Do not homogenize.
I didn't advocate it. I just pointed out it's possible.
It has been. It could be done. It could
I
be done.
I take no responsibility for any car wreck.
Yeah, you got it.
Sermonic car wrecks that might happen. I'm just saying, if you get desperate, you might want to go back and look on what you did on Matthew.
Well, either that or just stick with us, friends. By the time we finish today, you're going to have some ideas. We're going to throw several things out there. We've got, a little bit. I wouldn't call this an obscure cutting from the story of Joseph in Genesis, but it's not the part of the text we usually read. But it pairs well today with judgment and forgiveness and some of the other issues that come up. So enough of that foolishness. Tell me what you've been thinking, Bubba. Let's talk about digging in and getting ready to preach this week.
So there are, as normally happens, particularly this time of year, you have a gospel lesson that is the focus, and then Genesis, the Hebrew scriptures, both the first lesson and the psalm are commentary upon the subject matter that's in the gospel lesson. And then Corinthians, we've just been working our way through, and that's a whole other matter. The whole other matter, but there is one element of connection, one way that you can connect those, and one of my extraneous weavings.
Everybody waits every week along with me to say, all right, I'm going to figure out how is Delmer going to connect this today?
It's like a game. You know, back years ago at Holy Trinity in Nashville, there was the choir didn't sing at early service most of the time, and so the organist did a voluntary during the offering rather than the choir singing. And I would throw in snippets of obscure rock and roll lyrics into the sermon to see if the organist picked up on them and would incorporate them into the volunteer. It was a little game we like to play, and he was brilliant at it. And the one I remember the most is when one Sunday I said, and the truth of the matter is, folks, you don't always get what you want, but sometimes you get what you need. Of course, Rolling Stones, can't get no satisfaction. danged if he didn't work it in. He's going along with some box. So it's that kind of thing. I am going to make a prediction. Here we go. The main thing going through here is the love your enemies, forgiveness rather than reciprocation, not vindictiveness. Now, a couple of reasons why there. I am reminded every time I read this kind of language about loving your enemies, I'm reminded of the quote from G.K. Chesterton, in which he said, in some places in the scripture, our Lord encourages us to love our enemies. In other places, he tells us to love our neighbors. This is because, generally speaking, they are the same people.
They're often the same people.
Right. Often the same people. So this gospel section works on this long stretch of not reciprocating, of various ways you respond to those who are hateful and mean and difficult and have how they've treated you and how kingdom values operate as opposed to the way normal life issues operate. Mm-hmm. So as we look through this text, you'll find there are three units in this gospel lesson. The first unit is 27 through 31. And I'll always love one that starts with a, but I say it, but I say, you know, and it throughout the sermon on the plain, he has, you have heard it said, da, 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 but I say to you. So this
right.
is where, and it's not where Jesus is contradicting the law. Okay. This is, it's not exactly contradicting. It is in the rabbinical tradition of interpreting. And he's saying, here's a different way to look at this. This is what it really means. And he said, but I say, you listen, love your enemies. So this is kind of a build up to the golden rule, verse 31, do unto others as you would have them do to you. As it's been pointed out many times, this is not unique to Jesus. It's, you know, you can find something similar in the Greek Homer.
Right.
In the Roman Seneca. You can find it in the Apocrypha and Tobit. You can find it parallel Jewish intellectual Philo. So, and it was all around the culture. But that doesn't mean it's not true, just because a lot of different people besides Jesus said it. But what he's building to here doesn't exactly, see, this is an interesting thing. The placement of the golden rule doesn't exactly follow 27, 28, 29, and 30. Because there he's saying, if someone treats you badly, don't reciprocate. Instead, do something good for them. Which is not the same thing as saying do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Very
which
correct.
Is more reciprocal. So it's an interesting placement. So that section 27 through 31 is really advocating, as we're saying, this is Epiphany. He's advocating, what does it mean to live in the kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
By kingdom rules, not by world rules. Right. And that's really what's playing at play here. We have a normal way we would operate. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I'm going to protect myself against you. I'm going to take care. And Jesus says, in the kingdom, we're not like that. So he's built that Luke is using this and Matthew in response to what Jesus said to build to a point. And Luke's point is coming. He starts there. He does that little do unto others as you would have them do to you. Then he shifts into 32 through 36, where he says, now, on the one hand, I told you, don't be bad to those that are bad to you, and don't just be good to those who are good to you. That's, again, the way the world works. You know, if you love those who love you, what credit? Even sinners love those who love them. This second section, he's really, really talking about tit for tat. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. This kind of clan, I use the word clannish, but my little unit, my little group, my group of friends, you know, I'm in this club. We take care of each other in this club or in this community, in this church, you know, all these various ways in which we find the people we feel obliged to be good to, and they're good to us. And he doesn't say, don't do that. He just says, don't take any credit for it.
Yeah.
It's a social contract.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't think that you've done something.
Yeah.
If you're doing this, we've talked about this and try to get away from language of saying we're called to be this way or we're that.
Yeah.
But we are. This is the way the Christ life lives out. And so do I want extra credit for doing what I'm supposed to be doing?
27 through 36, and that's where the linchpin of doing to others as you would have them do unto you comes. Mm-hmm. Where he's saying, here's the way the world operates. Somebody messes with you, you mess with them back. You don't let them mess with you. And you have good friends. You want to be safe in this world, create a unit of people you can trust, and you do good things for them, they do good mm-hmm. stuff for you. I mean, at its most elemental level, we look at, oh, that's a gang. You know?
Yeah.
That's a gang. Unite against us. And but take the violence out. Take some of the kind of criminality out of it. We all do this. We all have people that we set this up. And Jesus is basically saying, you know, if people are bad to you, don't be bad back. And don't take a lot of credit for being good to people who are good to you. That's just the way the world works. Then he moves to the third section, which is the rest of the text, in which he says, be merciful just as your Father is heaven is merciful. End of verse 35, your reward will be great. You'll be children of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give as it is given to me. Measure, tamp down, all that. So he's building up to this sense of, why do we behave this way? Because God has given to us, though we didn't deserve it, not because we are his covenant partners. And God has not repaid us for bad, though we deserve that. And our calling is to treat one another the way God has treated us. This is all the way back to forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. So the homiletical development of this text goes from the more what sometimes we, let me reframe this. Sometimes we look at things like the Sermon on the Mount and the Sermon on the Plain as kind of a collection of things Jesus said, I'll put in one place, and we don't really look for a coherency. Well, this was a very coherent statement on Luke's part, building to a moment that's really about grace.
Right.
And about what God has done. Mm-hmm. As he builds up and say, and as he goes through the, don't do bad, don't take credit for doing good, it's all about God.
Yeah.
And our life is lived in imitation of God.
Mm-hmm. And I would posit that we lightheartedly referred to, well, you can go look up Matthew's version and work from that, that the Sermon on the Mount, the, you know, including the Beatitudes and other things, gets a lot more press. It's read a lot more often. We kind of offhand say, oh, yeah, and Luke has a version called the Sermon on the Plain. Yeah, ha-ha.
Yep.
In some ways, though, the way Luke constructs this, it is a little more tightly woven as it a sermon, if you will, or sort of this flow of ideas. And I think that is why this is a great opportunity to dig into that. And pastors, we need to dig into it and do our work. And I think to help people really stop and ponder the depth of what's going on here, because we have heard the, quote, Beatitudes so often. We do the normal thing. Oh, yeah, I heard that. Yeah, those are good. That's nice. And don't stop and let what this is building, as Luke presents it, what Jesus is building here is an incredibly deep narrative and meta-narrative, if you will, for our lives, how we are to live as Jesus' people. This is challenging stuff. Yeah. What do you mean, do good to those who hate me? What do you mean, love my enemies? What do you mean, don't judge? There's so many people that are wrong out there. They just need judging.
Yeah.
What we kind of get known for.
Well, one of the things we do when we look at this, or two things, is we say, oh, you know, I can't remember the phrase that was used, but it's kind of like this ideal or perfect ethic that we can't live up to. You know, I've heard people talk about that. Right. And particularly in Matthew's version, a kind of a parallel to verse 36, where Luke says, be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Mm-hmm. Matthew says, be ye perfect.
Right.
Just as your Father
in heaven is perfect.
Because, well, we can't do that. Good Lutheran law and gospel kind of way of approaching this. Many people over the years have said, well, this is to let us know we need the grace of God because we can't possibly do that. Well, that's not Luke's point.
That's not it, the point here.
The point here is to recognize that we aspire toward this because this is how God has treated us. And Jesus came to bring the kingdom of God, and he's describing to us how we are to aspire to live within the kingdom as citizens of the kingdom of God, not the city of God, as Augustine put it.
Right.
Not the kingdom of the world. And so that's where he's working. So a sermon on this, a homiletical piece on this, is to talk about, you know, this sounds like we can't do it, and we can't, but the call is the grace of God has mercifully accepted us, and we live within that, and God does it through us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we move in each moment to come to that space. Yeah.
And I would just quickly remind us that last week we had the opening section of this in the gospel portion last week. And one of the things we noted was, again, as Luke tells the story, it says, and Jesus came down
right
to be with the people. And we talked about what a powerful image that is, Jesus in the midst. I would tie into that this week as we're going, yeah, this is an ethic we can't live up to, but remember, this is about Jesus in the midst of us. This is about Christ living in us, and make whatever connections you want to how the Spirit living in us and working through us, etc. There's an opportunity to connect what we spoke about last week.
So one of the important things with verse 36, be merciful, just as your Father is merciful, not was. So if we turn this into God has forgiven me my past, so I must be perfect going into the future, we've missed the point. Mm-hmm. This is, what is the relationship we actually have with God? Mm-hmm. God is merciful to us in the past and the present. And that, therefore, we are merciful each day with ourselves and with others.
Right.
It is an ongoing relational growth. It says, do not judge and you will not be judged. That's future. Do not condemn and you will not be condemned. So this is a relational piece. And that's not to do away with the notion of a conversion moment and that sort of thing. I don't argue with that. It's just a recognition that we live continually in the already but not yet of being a saint and a sinner at the same time.
Yeah. It is not among our passages for today, but this is a good time to remember Lamentations, one of those Bible memory verses I still call up from my youth, Lamentations 3. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They're new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. It is over and over. God is being merciful today. The great Jesus prayer, particularly of the Orthodox tradition, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. There's so much that's summed up in that. Lord, be merciful. God is merciful to me. So,
And it's about that, the second part of my theme. Now, the first theme for the day that traced mostly out of the gospel, and I'm going to trace it plus a couple other things through the other lessons. So the first one is love your enemies, you know, as Jesus said, but we move further from that as to why, and it has to do with relationship with God. And all of our texts today have a message of trusting in God above all else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're confronted with people who do bad to you and you got to protect yourself, how do you lay your hands down and not fight back? You trust in God.
Yeah. How long's it been since we quoted Liston Mills?
Okay. Yes. Can God be trusted?
Can God be trusted? So many of our issues, well, do I really trust God? No, I want to bomb my enemies.
Yeah.
I want to wall my enemies off. I want to do whatever. Whoa, wait a minute. And I'm not about to chase a political trail here, but yeah. to stop and say, as I'm making choices, as I'm living, as I am a receiver and a bearer of God's mercy every single day, what does that really mean? And I think that's the challenge in front of us. If we're working with this text in a sermon to help our folks come to bear with that. And yeah, you probably don't want to mention a wall because that's going to send everybody off. And there's no way they're going
don't
to
go there.
About
don't go
else.
There. Don't
but,
go there.
Yeah.
Good thing the Egyptians didn't build a wall for those desperate people in Israel who needed to go to Egypt.
Yeah.
That moved to Genesis, you know, about trusting God. Now, as you said, this is one we don't, part of the story we don't usually do. And 15:20 has that great line that we all know. So, well, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, you know, that summary. Well, we're in a different part, but that message is what's here. This is kind of when Joseph first confronts his brother. So think about this. Just the overall story is more important, I think, than the particular text, is that this is the resolution, the first resolution of this wonderfully crafted short story about Joseph. His brothers sell him off down into Egypt. They essentially murdered him. They didn't know they were going to kill him. And then they said, well, we can get some money out of him. They assumed he's probably dead or is dead to them. Told his father he was dead. And then he goes in this story of he, you know, I love this, you know, the development of he becomes a powerful person. And you're thinking, why is he becoming powerful? This is a great story. And then his brothers come, and what's he going to do? And, I mean, in the culture and even in our time, I mean, I can see Jean-Claude Van Damme or, you know, one of those.
Kind
of,
I
got you, man. And, you know, this kind of revenge thing. Instead, and they're like terrified when they figure out it's him. I just see Joseph throw off the robe, you know, and I'm going to whack
Liam Neeson plays Joseph.
Yeah, Liam Neeson, you know, revenge moment, you know. Instead, they deserved an expected imprisonment, torture, death, you know. And there's a part of each of us who says, yeah, what are you doing, Joseph? You got them now.
Yeah.
You can rescue their families and all that, but these boys, they need to pay.
Lock them up.
Yeah,
what am I doing today? I don't know.
You're in a mood. But what's interesting here is he does. It's like the Chesterton thing. Not only are your neighbors, it's your brothers.
Yeah.
Love your enemies and love your family because they're usually the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And here he comes. And he does it. Now here's, and the answer is Joseph didn't, and the answer of why Joseph didn't is God. 45:5.
Mm-hmm.
For God sent me before you to preserve life. He doesn't say, I have evolved into a very nice person.
I'm going to forgive you guys today just because I feel like it.
I want to show you what kind of power I have. I could squash you, but I can also forgive you and keep you obedient to me the rest of your lives. He doesn't say any of that. He says, God did this. Trust God. I trust God. So that it comes to the end of that gospel lesson where he's merciful because God has been merciful. Joseph is aware that God's mercy was operative in everything, and his call is to be merciful.
And I would point out that he doesn't say, God has sent me here to preserve your life.
Nope.
Because Joseph was merciful first to the Egyptians.
Exactly.
And then here comes this picture of Israel getting in on that. This is the mercy of God. It is much broader. This is a rich, rich story. And I just... Well, I just finished teaching through the book of Genesis, and boy, when you read the whole thing in context and you see Joseph's story is the end result of a long, 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 long cycle of God's mercy.
And
that's what's portrayed in this book of Genesis.
The book.
And Joseph did toy with him a little bit. Okay, because there's this back and forth, put the money in their sacks and make them bring Benjamin and then, you know, bring them in. And he did lean into this sort of power. They saw him as an Egyptian. They saw him as the second most powerful person on the face of the earth. They knew full well he could squash them like a bug, which is what makes that opening sentence, the second half of verse 3. But his brothers could not answer him, so dismayed were they, when he finally says, "Hey, I'm Joseph. I'm your brother." Yeah. So anyhow, you're right about all of these things. I had to sort of lean into this. But it's not because Joseph just had a change of heart.
No, a moment. No, it was building.
It is a higher purpose here. It is a call. And it is an illustration in the book of Genesis of that covenant God made with Abraham. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make your name great. And through you, all nations of the earth are going to be blessed. This is the gospel in Genesis here.
So this ties into this whole trust in God and the Epiphany season, because the Epiphany is the revealing. And so this text is another revealing of God's plan. And this is why this is sort of what Jesus is doing in this sermon on the plain, what Luke has him doing there, is revealing what life in the kingdom's like.
Yep.
This goes all the way back to the book of Genesis, which was more of a dialogue. Mm-hmm. If we think about it that way, you got to think about it as a dialogue between who is God? God made the world. What about, is God just punished? Where is God? And all of this, and it comes to this resolution at the end of Genesis with God as in control and merciful and kind in spite of our sinfulness. He comes to a grace place. We mean it for evil. God means it for good. God is active. God has a plan in spite of what we see. And it sort of flows through all of this. This is why we don't do retribution. This is why we don't take a lot of credit for being good, is because God's plan, which is so contrary to what we think about in normal life, is grace.
That's it. It's all about the grace.
The grace to those who are grateful.
This is good stuff, Bubba. You got to give me 37 seconds on Psalm 37, and then we got to touch 1 Corinthians.
You got it.
We've done waxed a little eloquent already on these all right. passages.
You're good. 37 is almost works as a proverbial psalm. You can see it going verse 37:9, for the wicked shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land, also the other. This is kind of its summary. The salvation of the righteous is from the Lord, the last verse, but he is their refuge in time of trouble. This one goes back and forth in that kind of sense of trust God, do all the do not frets, or three do not frets, which says, do not react to evil. God's plan is at work. Do your stuff, be right. Now, it can have that reward punishment feel about it, but it is in the psalm, but the underneath core is trust in God. Do not get reactive to the moment. It will all come out. Now, looking over at Corinthians, the question here comes up in the very first verse, how are the dead raised, but with what kind of body do they come? I just want to point out that one. This text also begins with but.
And there you go.
The gospel starts with but, the homiletical but. So you got to look back. And Paul is trying to deal with questions about how resurrection works, the central mystery of the faith, that key question there. So how is it that we're raised? And he comes with a natural world analogy, but the real underneath question is one that lives with us forever, and different answers work for different generations. The key question is, you've got the Greek notion, which I think we live with pretty well, is that we continue to live with, is what I mean. We continue to think this way, is there's the body, and inside the body is the soul. And when the body dies, the soul floats off. That's what the ancient
forever.
And where does the soul go? Sheol, in the place of the dead. Does it go to heaven? Does it go to, all of this soul stuff. And I think most people think along those lines. even today. That's the thinking that they have in their head about this. Mm-hmm. And Christian resurrection goes in a different direction, but it's hard to explain. So if it, because we can dig up the body, mm-hmm. and it rusts. My daddy, I remember one time my daddy said, "Now, when I was on the ship going over to World War II, somebody died on the ship." That's the way he thought. He said they dunked, they buried the body at sea, and you know the fish ate it. So in the resurrection, what gets where does all that body, you know, how do all those body parts come back together? That's the kind of question Paul's dealing with. Yeah. And I'm, people are saying, isn't it just more reasonable that there's a soul and the body dies and rots and the soul, that which is really us, goes off to heaven? I remember being at a funeral where they said, you know, this is that what we have here before is just the kernel. Like a walnut. This is just the kernel. The nut has gone to heaven. I was like, you didn't think that one through, did you?
So, there, brother.
So Paul's answer, you know, the thing from nature, you know, one from one, we go from one life to another life with a seed. You know, it was this and it goes and it dies. It has to be dead and buried in order to live as something new. Mm-hmm. And it a whole process, and here's back to trust in God. The whole process is controlled by God. Mm-hmm. And then he comes to his proof at the end. This is why Jesus is important. We have seen him resurrected, but it was a, not the same. It was noticeably Jesus, and it was a body, not a disembodied soul, mm-hmm. but it was a different body.
Right.
Going through walls and all that. So there's the argument he's making, I think, for us. And if you want to go there, that's rich stuff to worry with.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one comes later, like in a couple of months after in the season of Easter. But underneath all of this is the trust in God. If you feel it, that's where I said the connection is. In all of this process, we don't really know what we trust in God, that what comes next is of God. So that's my tenuous connection of Corinthians to everything else.
We'll buy it this week, Bubba. It's good stuff. As we said at the outset, these are texts we don't handle a lot, but they are great texts. There is plenty of stuff to walk around in here. Y'all get in there and find you one and, you know, just rear back and have at it. We hope it's a good week for everybody this week. Not much left for us to do today, Bubba, other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Sally Gooding, performed by Nat Key and the Bowties. We go out today with Forgiveness, composed and performed by Matthew West.
It's the opposite of how you feel when the pain they caused is just too real. Takes everything you have to say the word forgiveness. Forgiveness. It flies in the face of all your pride. It moves away the mad inside. It's always anger's own worst enemy. Even when the jury and the judge say you got a right to hold a grudge, it's the whisper in your ear saying set it free. Forgiveness. Set a prisoner free. There is no end to what its power can do. So let it go and be amazed by what you see through eyes of grace. The prisoner that it really frees is you. Forgiveness. Forgiveness.